Welcome to the Inner Side radio program. My name is Scooter. I hope that tonight, all my fellow Americans kneeling on the brink of another war will join me this evening to pray for peace in the Middle East. Not just because it's proven to be so effective in the past, but it keeps us off the streets and out of trouble. And don't forget to keep shopping for peace as well. Which brings us to our interfaith segment. Next, the role of women in society from the perspective of the Abrahamic faiths, who all seem to fundamentally agree on this particular subject. The Abrahamic flavor for this evening will be coming from some of our Catholic friends and their epic YouTube exposure of feminist lies, number 4 in the series.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Fix the Family. My name is Raylan Alamo, and we are bringing you Truth Without Compromise for the Family. This is our blog edition, and we are still doing feminist lies. We're on number 4, and feminist lie number 4 is that all girls need to go to college. This goes along with just the whole idea that everybody's got to go to college, but in particular, girls, because as we've been talking about, we have a bit of a problem with our depopulation, and we need young ladies to be having babies. And if we look at going to college and what happens at that time, you know, it's usually coinciding with the time of when these young ladies want to start having babies. So what happens? They have those mothering hormones, beautiful chemical reactions coming on, and what do? They a lot of times will subdue those with contraceptive pills, which are a mortal sin, and inhibiting them from doing the thing that comes normal and natural for them. Because why? They are pursuing a degree. Why? To pursue a career. Because colleges, stop and think about it, what do colleges do to prepare young ladies to become wives and mothers? Because let's face it, the vast majority of these young ladies will grow up to be wives and mothers and families. Not those that will remain single and stay on with a career. And so if you think about it, college does virtually nothing to prepare a young lady to be a wife and a mother. What they actually do is prepare someone to be a breadwinner for a family, be a professional or some type of technical type of job to be a provider for a family. That is the man's role, the husband and father's role in the home as prescribed by God. So what does the church say about this anyway? Let's go to one of my favorite papal documents, a church encyclical actually, from 1930, with Pope Pius XI and Casti Canubi. He quotes St. Augustine, who quotes St. Paul in his letter to St. Timothy. St. Augustine admirably deduces from the word of the holy apostle St. Paul to Timothy, when he says, the apostle himself is therefore a witness that marriage is for the sake of generation. I wish, he says, young girls to marry, not to become CEOs, not to become scientists or anything, but to marry. And as if someone said to him, why? He immediately says, to bear children, to be mothers of families. This is what the saints of old have told us about what is the desire for these young ladies. College does not do that for them. And then a little later on, good Pius XI goes on to say, if a true Christian mother, and I like the way he throws that word true in there, if a true Christian mother weigh all these things, she will indeed understand what a sense of deep consolation that her word, of her, the words of our Savior were spoken. A woman, when she has brought forth a child, remembereth not the anguish for joy that a man is born in to the world. This is what God desires for so many young ladies. But on top of that, what of those young ladies who are being called to a vocation, to the religious life, and even higher calling? If they are in the rigors of university education, Will they hear that call while they are being prepared to be some type of CEO or scientist somewhere? Will they hear that call? So many ladies who have gone into the religious life have those ambitions to do these things. What some of the saints of old started hospitals, started universities, were school teachers and had Catholic schools there. Those calls are being made there by the Holy Spirit. But do they hear them while they are in college, while all the worldliness is around them? Maybe some of these young ladies don't desire to go to college, but their parents would push them into it. Maybe that's actually a good thing, that they don't have that desire to go to college, but want that time to discern what God is calling them to. We see so much of the worldliness and then heartache that results as a result of it, from girls going into college and going into careers, competing with their husbands and having loads of family problems and not having the children that God desired for them to have. Let's stop and think of how we are forming our daughters in the world that we live in today. My name is Ray Lynn Alamo. I'll come back for more Feminist Lies here at Fix the Family. God bless.
Because, do you understand why I get so pissed off at parents? Just because I have a weird haircut that totally kind of makes me look like a dude, and I have a lip piercing, and I most often wear heavy eyeliner just not today because I kind of ran out, doesn't mean I worship Satan. Doesn't mean I'm a bad kid. Parents, if you are out there, stay with me. I'm an honor student. Never touched drugs or alcohol in my life. Never broken the law. Great kid. I've babysat for other kids. I am an excellent drummer. I can skateboard. And as long as you don't disagree with me for every reason, I'm actually a nice person. Believe it or not.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the US government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.
World War III is a very important, very progressive war that Obama tells me is very important. So it must be.
When I first saw the president speak in 2008 in a YouTube clip posted to my Facebook page, I knew he was going to be right all the time. So I support World War III and IV and any moon war the president may want to start.
I mean, there is no way that he or the cabal of corporate interests, spy agencies, and shadow bankers that tell him what to do would ever mislead us.
The $1.6 trillion that we raise will help create a war that truly puts the liberal in neoliberal. There will be millions of troops, thousands of organic grass-fed bombs, hybrid Prius tanks, rockets controlled by iPads, and drones that play the Lumineers while they attack.
World War III is not going to be like those other Republican wars fought on just 1% of the world. This war is going to be fought in 99% of the world.
It'll be everywhere. Russia, China, Africa, Cincinnati, your favorite brunch spot, the one with those kick-ass ranchero breakfast burritos.
Everywhere. World War III will also be the most social media-focused war ever. It'll be all over Twitter, Facebook, Vine, Pinterest, and whatever eventually replaces Pinterest. And I mean, just think of all the hilarious gifts we can make of cats reacting to their owners' homes being obliterated.
Lots of shock, but tons of aww.
And come on, guys, how good will Michelle's arms look in sleeveless army fatigues?
We have a lot of great rewards for our donors. If you donate $10 to the World War III Project, you'll get a shout out on social media.
Hashtag thank you.
A $25 donation will get you a piece of rubble from a war-torn Middle Eastern country kissed by Senator Lindsey Graham.
A $100 donation gets you a day pass to leave your local refugee camp.
You'll probably end up in a refugee camp, but it'll have free Wi-Fi.
And a $10 million donation gets you your own senator for a year.
So please, help us reach our goal of $1.6 trillion so we can make World War III a reality. Why? Because Obama.
Because Obama.
What?
This is your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net. If someone told you they were going to rob 7 banks, and he listed which ones, he was like, this one, etc. Then over the coming years, he did indeed rob most of those banks. And then one day you're walking with him past one of the few banks he hasn't robbed, and he goes, you and I have to rob this bank. Not to steal the money, but because the money is actually a bomb that's made to look like money, and so we have to grab it and bring it back to my place. Not to steal the money, just to help the people that are going to die from the bomb. That's why we have to do it. Would you believe him? Well, that's the problem with the U.S. government telling us it's now time to bomb Syria. And here's the thing. It's not that I know what happened with chemical weapons in Syria. And it's not that I think President Assad is a lovely chap who enjoys cucumber sandwiches and patting little bunny rabbits on the back of their heads. It's simply that General Wesley Clark told us that the White House and the Pentagon have had ongoing plans to invade or otherwise dismantle 7 countries. Here's a clip from the video.
I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office that says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in 7 countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I couldn't believe it would really be true, but that's actually what happened.
That's kind of damning, right? And something tells me Mr. Wesley Clark wouldn't have been so forthcoming if he had won his bid for the presidency a few years back. The other reason I'm opposed to jumping on board the old idea of bombing to save the day is because I can't picture a time we've ever done that in the past 60 years. Do we ever just bomb to save the day in a place that doesn't have some major oil interest? It's like a lifeguard who says he's there to save people's lives, but then he just ends up doing mouth-to-mouth on all the hot chicks, whether they need it or not. Meanwhile, there are hairy, obese men drowning left and right, whole piles of ugly dudes lost to the deadly activity of amateur swimming. And at some point, you gotta be like, I don't think that lifeguard is really here to save the day. And I don't think bombing Syria has anything to do with saving people. Neither does former NATO Supreme Allied Commander, General Wesley Clark.
It was a pretty stunning thing. You mean the purpose of the military is to start wars and change governments? It's not to sort of deter conflict? We're going to invade countries? And I my mind was spinning.
Years ago, a man named L. Ron Hubbard said the real way to make $1 million is to start a religion. He then went on to start a religion. He founded Scientology, which believes Tom Cruise is the Virgin Mary and Will Smith is the burning bush. But L. Ron Hubbard didn't claim he started the religion for money. He claimed he did it because it's the true religion. Do you believe him? I should hope not. So So why do we believe the White House and Congress when they say we now need to go to war with Syria to save the day? Believing that makes Scientology seem downright sensible. It's our ability to not go to war that defines us as men and women of moral principle. Going to war is easy. It's what we do. It's what we train for. It's what we spend most of our money on here in America. It's our default position, like weighted dice landing on seven, like Simon Cowell or Jamie Dimon sucking the devils. And what do you know? We landed on war again. What are the odds? You see, if you're a rageaholic and you spend all day, every day figuring out how to be a better fighter, then not fighting is a huge achievement. That's been your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net.
What a man I was. I shot off his left ear, and then his right, and then tore off his belt buckle with hot lead. And then I shot off everything that counts. And when he bent over to pick up his drawers and his marbles, poor critter, I fixed it so he wouldn't have to straighten up no more. Well, I went in for a fast snort, and one guy seemed to be looking at me sideways, and that's how he died, sideways, looking at me and clutching for his marble.
The absolutely, without question, no doubt at all, genuine, 100% verifiably true information obtained by the Israeli Mossad, motto, by way of deception, thou shalt do war, that Bashar al-Assad was guilty of gassing his own people in a situation where the Syrian leader knew that the United States Navy was poised on his own doorstep to take action if he did anything so stupid as to gas his own people while the United States Navy was poised on his own doorstep. But, according to America's top government officials and military brass, that is exactly what the Syrian leader did, and that is what they are telling Congress and the people of the United States. No question of reasonable doubt here, Assad is guilty. He may not be the world's most lovable leader, but he is far from being stupid, and these people are blatantly ignoring plausible reports that the rebels were responsible for the incident.
Meanwhile, the foreign-backed insurgents in Syria have taken responsibility for last week's chemical attack, which the U.S. and its allies are blaming on the Syrian government. Militants in the Damascus suburb of Ghouta admitted to Dale Gavlak, a freelance AP journalist who broke the story for Mint Press News, that they received the chemical weapons from Saudi Arabia. The insurgents have also said that the casualties were the result of mishandling of the chemical ordnance, which happened because they were not properly trained how to handle such material. A few months ago, shocking footage posted on the internet showed insurgents testing chemical weapons on lab rabbits and making threats to use them against Syrians.
How can these people look their own family members in the eye, particularly their children? But never mind them, it's certainly working on Capitol Hill where it really counts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank all three of you gentlemen for your service to our country. And I want to thank all of you for sharing the information that you have thus far with Congress and the American public, as well as the world. And I think clearly that anyone looking at this evenly, that has been a success in terms of making clear the case there were chemical weapons used, and the Assad government indeed used them.
I wonder if Representative Keating realizes that his wonderful country has been peppering the Middle East with chemical weapons since the first Gulf War.
Yeah, and what we're going to see here, of course, is groups like AIPAC, who do want the war, are going to have another couple weeks to work on Congress. And that's not in our favor. That's not something that's going to work well for us. Because obviously that will give Congress too much time to think about this problem. And people like ourselves, who have been sending them emails, making phone calls, are kind of going to become, I think, in a way, de-energized over the next couple of weeks, because we think basically that we've moved back from the brink of war. Well, I'm not so sure we have.
Is the absolute lack of evidence presented to the American people, presented to Congress, certainly the members of the British Parliament dealt the United States a stinging defeat, and Cameron a stinging defeat, because they've even though Powell's, the evidence presented by Colin Powell was a fabrication, at least he presented the evidence, even though it was false. Kerry hasn't even done that.
Yeah, that's right, and I was kind of expecting that Obama last night would throw out a couple of specifics. I mean, he did talk about, oh yes, we know they did this, we know they did that. Well, of course, the fact is they don't know they did that. They're surmising that this is what the bits and pieces that they've managed to pick up or be given by the Israelis mean the following, and that's what he's basically saying. But the fact is, there was a piece by Gareth Porter yesterday, which I'm sure you've seen, which essentially said that the fact that the previous intelligence report on this that came out on August 30th, 4 pages, came out of the White House, was an indication that the intelligence community is not behind this. And I'm hearing the same thing from my former intelligence colleagues, that basically a lot of this information they regard as fabricated.
Well, it's interesting that in that report that you and the other veterans of intelligence professionals for sanity pointed out that ordinarily Kerry would not be the one presenting this. It seems Kerry has taken over the role of Secretary of Defense as well as head of the Intelligence Committee in making these presentations. It's extraordinary that the Secretary of State has now assumed like he is controlling or running the war operation.
Yeah, and that's maybe an indication that Hagel is not fully on board of this. And there's also, as they say, indications that the intelligence community and its leadership, which would be inclined to support the president, is also having problems with all of this. So it's funny. It's like we always make comparisons with Iraq, and of course Iraq was a pure case of fabrication of information, but most people didn't know that. It wasn't that obvious at the time. Now we have a case where it's pretty obvious that there's considerable fabrication and considerable twisting of the reality of this situation, and that's why I think for the first time in my memory, the American people are really rising up and saying no on this.
That's so encouraging too, because they've been led by the PNAC crowd, the Jinsa crowd, to get behind U.S. wars, and after 10 years, 12 years, they're tired of it. One of the things that's interesting is how the Obama administration, both Obama and Kerry, kind of a bait and switch, that they're trying to say that the evidence that Iraqis were killed is the same thing as telling us who did it. And I was astonished when Kerry came up with this figure of 1,429 Syrians killed and 426 children. But no other country or no one on the ground comes anywhere near those figures, and yet the American media has accepted those figures without questioning them, except there was an article in the LA Times the other day which said that even the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, the person who runs that in England, was shocked because his estimation is one-third lower than Kerry's. And the United States has nobody on the ground, so this is like another smoke and mirrors operation, this time being run by the Democrats. So essentially, when it comes to foreign policy, is there a difference between the Democrats and Republicans?
Well, clearly there isn't. I think the opposition we're seeing now from the Republicans to the attack on Syria is purely an anti-Obama thing. I don't think it's anything that's quite in their DNA or anything that they have a resistance to wanting to attack another Arab country. Rand Paul did an interesting little speech last night, a rebuttal to Obama, which was quite decent insofar as it went. And it pointed out some of these discrepancies. This whole thing is full of discrepancies. I did an article last week for Anti-War, which I did address the issue of those numbers. And I said, basically, How did he come up with these numbers? Did he use a Ouija board, or did he go to the nearest rebel chief, and the rebel chief told him these were the numbers? I mean, it's incredible that the media is buying into this, and also buying into the argument that it was absolutely for certain Assad who did this. That's by no means clear.
One of the things I wanted to bring up is the role of Saudi's Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Kerry brags about how the Saudis are on board. Of course, they've been funding fundamentalists, jihadists in Syria, and Kerry is happy to have them. He's the only country he could really brag about that's on America's side.
Yeah, he's been doing that. And, of course, in the case of Syria, the Saudis have been going after the Syrians for like 20 years now. Their support of dissident groups inside Syria goes way back. And they've been trying to, here we have secular regimes in the Middle East, in Iraq and in Syria, most particularly. And it's ironic that our chief ally, if you want to call him that, the Saudis in the situation are trying their best to destroy these secular regimes because basically they want a version of their own fundamentalist Islamic Wahhabism. And this would seem to be something, if you could wake the American people or wake Congress up to what's going on, we're supporting the people that basically are our enemies. And it's incomprehensible that the White House, Obama in his speech last night, knowing that this, people are talking about this, he doesn't even address these issues. These are issues they didn't even want to go near. You wonder if a little honesty coming out of the White House actually might improve his standing, might improve people being willing to cooperate with him.
Well, the question is whether he's his own man at this point. He seems to be easy to push around. They must have tremendous confidence in their power to be so public about it. I mean, since the Iraq War, Iran has been in their sights, as has Syria. Publicly, so this is just a continuation of that by other means. But getting back to Bandar has had this amazing relationship with a number of presidents, going back at least back to George Bush Sr. He certainly collaborated with the CIA.
That was our old friend Jeffrey Blankford on KZYX in conversation with Philip Giraldi, retired CIA operations officer who was a co-signer of a letter from Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, where they pointed out the contradictions and falsehoods in the so-called intel and John Kerry's flimsy evidence presented to Congress. The letter was called Obama Warned on Syrian Intel and was signed by numerous other high-level former intelligence people, including Ray McGovern and Anne Wright, who was posted 5 days ago. We also spent an hour speaking with Jeff Blankford about the evolution of the conflict in Syria on the Skeptiles podcast, which can be found at skeptiles.com. I can sum up the whole thing for you if you're on the fence about this. I'm pushing 60, and I can't seem to recall a single military incursion by the U.S. that had a positive result, was advantageous to the American people, and didn't inflict severe trauma on the victims of our foreign policy. That should be plenty of evidence right there. But if the United States, the Saudi Arabians, and Israel or agreeing on an aggressive act, that should be a pretty big red flag. What are they going to call that? The International Pariah Coalition? We also heard from Lee Camp at leecamp.net, Charles Bukowski, Feminine Lies number 4 from the Religious Kooks at Fix the Family YouTube channel, music by CyberZen Sound Engine and Bette Midler. This has been the Innerside Radio Program. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
Down with disease, 3 weeks in my bed, trying to stop these demons that keep dancing in my head.